It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Governor Tony Evers has outlined his 2026 legislative agenda, which is focused on addressing rising costs for Wisconsinites. This is Evers' last year in office. He announced last summer that he would not run for a third term. As the legislature aims to conclude its session in March, we're checking in with our state's 46th governor on the work he wants to get done. Governor Tony Evers, welcome back to Wisconsin Today.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Lawmakers looking to adjourn their session sometime in March. Where do you find the most consensus in that time frame with the Republican-led legislature?
Well, that's a great question. We're hopeful that they're going to be aggressive. And, you know, there's no magic that says that they have to leave town in the end of March. They can stay as long as they want to. And I think that's good politics for both sides. And so hopefully if they don't put an end date on there and feel that they have to get everything done by end of March, that'd be okay with me, because I know there's some really big things to do. In my proposal to have them consider $1.3 billion in property tax relief, lowering out-of-pocket costs for working families, making sure that we're going to have enough money for food share. That's a federal program, fully funding the Knowles-Nelson stewardship, and also get PFAS out of the legislature and into a better place. And so whether that can all be done by the end of March, it probably could if they work 5 days a week. But if that's not the case, they can hang around for a while. The elections aren't until next November. That's a long period of time.
Well, let's take those one at a time. Senate President Mary Felskowski joined us last week to talk about Republican priorities in this session. Here she is responding to your request for $1.3 billion in property tax relief for Wisconsinites.
Where is the money going to come from? So now let's put it out there. So what we did, negotiated with the governor. We did an extremely large increase in special ed. So that's where the money went to this year. School districts, and I know it's hard, but sometimes when there's not additional revenue, you got to tighten your belt. When the state doesn't have the money, tighten your belt.
Felskowski there saying schools should tighten their belts if Wisconsinites want property tax relief. How do you view this trade-off?
Well, I don't think it's a trade-off. $1.3 billion is what we hope we're going to be able to take care of the property tax problems in Wisconsin, or at least begin to do that. You know, I like Senator Felskowski a lot. She's a really smart person, but she also knows that that over the last decades, our schools have been essentially underfunded, and primarily because of Republicans. And so we have over $4 billion excess money in our checking account, and we believe $1.3 billion will help our schools be in a better place and also lower property taxes. So it can be done. The idea that somehow you have to tighten your belt. Well, that's what they've been doing for several decades, and that's a problem. We need to move forward. We have the resources available, and hopefully we can do that.
Felskowski and fellow legislative Republicans are also calling for the end to your partial veto during the previous state budget that extended a temporary per-pupil school funding increase by 400 years. Let's take a listen.
So Governor Evers in his 400-year veto, saying that we needed to do $1 billion to fund that $325 per pupil, we would have had to have raised taxes on people who are already financially struggling. Now, you're tying the hand of future legislators no matter what the economic outlook goes. What if there's a recession? What if there's a depression? It's not fiscally responsible.
Governor, are you open to negotiating in some way this centuries-long expansion of additional revenue limit authority for districts?
I'm not interested if they're going to go home in March and not do anything.
So you find that if you get some things done here, if you see movement, there might be movement to renegotiate that?
I guess it's always a possibility. My main concern is our public schools and making sure that we don't continue this every year, essentially struggling schools and property taxes going up. So I'm concerned about those two things. If that 400-year thing is part of a discussion, I will discuss it, but I'm not going to give it up without, it's not going to just disappear. If it's going to disappear, we're going to have to get something in return.
We have Governor Tony Evers on the line about his 2026 legislative agenda and top priorities that he wants to get done with the legislature. Turning to data centers, the Assembly passed a bill this week aimed at regulating, our state's booming, expanding AI data center industry. Republicans say the bill aims to protect our state's land, water, and the people's pocketbooks. Do you support it?
I've read about the bill. We have to do something because I personally believe that data centers can be a help economically for local folks. But we also have to make sure that we're doing it with the best science, and we have to make sure that climate change isn't as, I know that's a dirty word for some people nowadays, but I still feel strongly about that. And so they have to be very good in that area and making sure that there's good economics for our locals. So I think it can be done. Whether these specific bills are the answer to that question, it's been changing by the day, so I'm not going to respond to that. But what I am responding is that I think it can work, but it has to be, we have to be protecting our environment, and we have to be doing the best thing financially for our local folks.
And you've seen a lot of pushback on these projects in communities around the state. They're worried about the cost on local residents. They're worried about the cost to the environment. What is the best way to protect Wisconsinites against these risks?
Yeah, and first of all, we have to make sure that those are accurate assertions. For example, the plant in Racine County, they are not using water from Lake Michigan. They may get the initial part of it from them, but they recirculate that water to make it continually usable to as a cooling agent. So we just have to, and they will use water just like anybody else. They're going to have bathrooms for their employees. They're going to have other water issues, but it's not going to be done specifically to get out of Lake Michigan and use it up and just keep taking. So that's just an example. People have to listen to each other, work together, make sure that the environment is taken care of, and making sure that the municipality is getting a good deal. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with getting a good deal, getting a good environmental approach, and also getting good paying jobs. I think it can be done. Now, what people have to do is listen and work together.
Along with the environment, you and Republicans have had this long stalemate over how to deal with PFAS contamination. It sounds like there is a deal in the works. How close is it?
I think it's very close. I hope to be able to sign a bill that I can sign in the very near future. We've talked to the people that are involved, and I think they are on the right direction.
Will the state spills law still have teeth to protect the environment after this PFAS deal is done?
Yes, the spills law will still be as important in the future as it is now.
I want to turn to immigration and ICE. Have you been in touch with Minnesota Governor Tim Walz about the massive ICE presence in Minnesota?
Yeah, we've talked a couple times. We texted a couple times, and I stand with him. Obviously, it's a horrible situation that Minnesota is going through, and in particular, that part of the state. But yes, he's doing the best he can to make sure people are protesting reasonably and lawfully, and it's not a good situation, that's for sure. You just have to watch TV and you understand how it is. It's tearing apart that state and certainly the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. So we got to get that done. That has to change, and hopefully it'll change soon.
How is Wisconsin preparing? I mean, we saw Wisconsin's Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez proposing banning federal immigration enforcement activity around Wisconsin courthouses, schools, daycares, other areas. How is your administration preparing?
We're doing that by not pontificating during a campaign. We're actually calling people all across the state of Wisconsin, local leaders, local nonprofits, people who work with the Hispanic population, and others, our tribal nations. I talked to them the other day. We are working together to make sure we're prepared if something happens here. And that's how we're doing it. Local leaders are asking us to do what we're doing, which is bringing them together and preparing.
So it's basically all around communication right now, and you make sure you have open lines with a lot of different entities.
Yeah, absolutely, and we're working them with them. None of them are saying let's go full bore and make sure that we. You know, no one's saying anything other than let's continue to talk. Let's make sure that we're prepared. And that's what we're doing.
Governor Evers, thank you for joining us.
Have a good day.
You too. That is Democratic Governor Tony Evers talking about his legislative priorities as he wraps up his second term this year. Evers announced last July that he will not run for a third term. Coming up on Wisconsin Today, meet the new director of Wisconsin's Economic Development Agency. What's the outlook on doing business here?
Wisconsin's holding its own in this economy, but we need to take it to the next level. And the governor and I want to keep our foot on the gas to make sure that we get there.
That's next on WPR News. This is Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This week, WPR is taking a look at how the Trump administration's policies have reshaped Wisconsin 1 year in. From the dismantling of the U.S. Department of Education to withholding billions of dollars of federal dollars, K-12 and post-secondary education saw unprecedented changes over the last year. Corrine Hess has more on the cancellation of one grant used to train special education teachers in Milwaukee.
The school day is almost over at Pulaski High School on Milwaukee's south side, and most students are packing up to leave. But Sarah Lind is still helping a student struggling with her English homework.
So that's how they're similar. What do you think is unusual about that?
It takes some time, but Lind and the young woman figure it out before the last bell. Lind is a special education teacher who moves from room to room at Pulaski to help students where needed. This is a second career for Lind that almost didn't happen. Last year, just as she was finishing a teacher residency program through the University of Wisconsin-Madison, the federal funding for the project was cut by the Trump administration.
We were all like, are we going to be able to continue? Are we going to still be able to get our teaching license, continue in this program? What are we going to do? Are we going to be stuck with this degree that's half done? Are we going to have to pay this back?
Lind was one of 36 people to join the UW-Madison Teacher Residency Program in 2023. The program was a partnership between the university and MPS. It provided graduate students with on-the-job training for a year while they completed their master's degree in special education. In return, students pledged to stay at MPS to teach after graduation. The partnership was funded by a five-year, $3.3 million federal grant. Michael Harris is the chief of staff for MPS. He says it's always a struggle to fill special education positions, so the program was a great opportunity.
It was really like the gold standard, the way that it was structured.
Then, in February 2025, the Education Department abruptly canceled the grant. According to the department, the money was being used to, quote, train teachers and education agencies on divisive ideologies. MPS approved funding to keep the program alive, while UW-Madison appealed the decision. Harris says the district didn't want to lose teachers.
We knew that we needed to make sure that we were taking care of these individuals so that we could retain them in the long run.
In August, UW-Madison learned the Department of Education denied their appeal. 3 days after his January 20th inauguration, President Trump issued an executive order to eliminate diversity, equity, and inclusion from schools. In Wisconsin, that's resulted in the termination of previously approved, federally funded projects across the state's public universities. Kimber Wilkerson is the project director of the teacher residency program at UW-Madison. She says the application described recruiting teachers from a diverse pool of candidates. In her view, that didn't make the program a DEI initiative.
It's hard to appeal when the basis for the termination feels like it's hard to understand.
Will Flanders is a research director at the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. He believes the Trump administration has made common sense reforms to education that most Americans support. He cited reinstating Title IX regulations in girls' sports, federal tax credits for private schools, and dismantling the Department of Education to remove bureaucracy. Flanders says the Trump administration has been clear. By removing DEI from education, that people will not be judged by their skin color.
You know, if you want to have programs that benefit sort of downtrodden individuals, there's still an opportunity for that. You just can't use racial terms to do it. Create a program for low-income families, and oftentimes you'll benefit African-American families and Hispanic families as well, but we just can't use the language of race.
Wilkerson says in her more than two decades at UW-Madison, she has never had a federal grant rescinded. In fact, until last year, she says she felt like her work is an extension of the work being done by the Department of Education. Now she says educators are having to reinterpret what their goals are. Corrine Hess, Wisconsin Public Radio.
This is Wisconsin Today. Wisconsin has a new leader working on economic growth for the state. Governor Evers appointed John W. Miller as the new secretary and CEO of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation last month. He replaces Missy Hughes, who left the position to run for governor as a Democrat. Miller takes over at a time where economic issues are top of mind for many Wisconsinites over questions about affordability, property taxes, data centers, and more. Miller is a little more than a month into the job and recently spoke with Rob Ferret.
What does it mean to you to be in charge of the WEDC? What drew you to this position?
Well, I started my career in public service. I was a congressional staffer for about 10 years in Washington, D.C., actually working for a member of Congress from Wisconsin. So I'd always had an interest in serving the people. After that, I spent a lot of time in business, and I had this opportunity come up to go back to working in the public sector. And it was a great way to intertwine my experience in business and working for government. So I leapt up the opportunity.
What are some of your top priorities when it comes to economic development in Wisconsin?
Well, I think the governor sent a signal by bringing someone with deep manufacturing experience. I ran a manufacturing company. We made farm equipment for the better part of a decade. And I also have quite a bit of experience running a venture fund. So I have a lot of experience in tech investment. So those two things, I think the governor realized the next leader of the WEDC was pretty important because two things. One, manufacturing is the core of Wisconsin's economy, employing more people per capita than really any other state. Maybe Indiana swaps back and forth with us. But we also need to keep advancing, and we need to do that by investing in companies that are developing the next cutting-edge technology. So Wisconsin's holding its own in this economy, but we need to take it to the next level. And the governor and I want to keep our foot on the gas to make sure that we get there.
This economy has a lot of question marks. What are some of your biggest concerns, some of the biggest headwinds you think Wisconsin is facing?
Well, there is no doubt the economic outlook is what it is. We have a situation where we have a little bit of inflation. Things are costing more than they should. And so that impacts both employers and employees. But things are looking pretty good in Wisconsin. You know, we do have, also I'll get to in a second, the issue of tariffs. But I just heard a report from the Wisconsin Center on Manufacturing Progress, and they did a survey of manufacturers that found that 65% said the state's business climate was heading in the right direction. So, and some of them even said the economy was growing. So a lot of them are confident in their outlook. What they really need are to make sure that they have the capital that they need to expand and the workers that they need to fill those roles. They're also uncertain about tariffs. Mm-hmm. Tariffs have, as a business owner, the worst thing you can have is uncertainty. And so without knowing what the tariff climate really is, it causes paralysis. So they don't want to make investment. But we have to weather those things. We're continuing to engage our partners worldwide here in Wisconsin. We had, before I arrived, a number of trade missions to Germany and France last year. We also had done in the past missions to Australia, China, and Mexico. I'm actually going to take my first trade mission to Mexico to see if we can engage some trade partners there. So we are pushing forward in a climate that is uncertain nationally, but I think in Wisconsin, most employees are feeling fairly confident.
You mentioned venture capital. Historically, Wisconsin, when you rank state by state, doesn't do great when it comes to luring venture capital to invest in those early startup businesses here in the state. What do you think we could do in Wisconsin to turn that around?
Well, one of the great things that we have is the Wisconsin Investment Fund, which is a program started last year where we get $100 million to co-invest along with some of our leading investment partners here in Wisconsin. And we use those funds to basically match funds that they raise on their own to put into the best and brightest companies here in Wisconsin. So the biggest thing that a new company needs is capital. And so if we can help provide capital to some of these companies that are just starting out, that will set them off on the right pace. So that has been a huge bolster to the startup community here in Wisconsin. So I think that, and we've invested the first tranche of that money. We have two more tranches still to come that will be put into those companies where they can use to deploy to not only do R&D on their products, but also hire people to help them. So it'll help the entire startup ecosystem as a whole.
Also related to startups, you've had a role on the UW System Board of Regents. People often point toward the UW system as having spinoffs into local business startup. What do you see as the role of the university system?
I'm really glad that you asked that. One of the things that I really got to learn with the University of Wisconsin system was the idea of the Wisconsin idea, which is that the university should feel in touch every member and every place in our community, every corner of the state. So we want to make sure that as the WEDC does its work, that it really takes hold of that. And we don't just focus on the really large investments that are made and some of the headline getting businesses like Eli Lilly, which is investing $4 billion in Wisconsin. Those are great, but at the WEDC, we think we can walk and chew gum at the same time and also work on partnering with the university in all sorts of other ways to make sure that we're advancing. We partner with them in a number of ways. They are actually involved in a Ignite grant that they have applied for, which will help with the advanced manufacturing. There's also going to be one of the things that one of our partners is Microsoft. They, along with the WEDC, partnered with us to create a co-innovation lab at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. There's only 7 of those in the world, so it's pretty impressive. And this co-innovation lab is going to dedicate their focus to helping manufacturing advance their competitive advantage through AI. So it's the first lab that's based at a university. Obviously, we're proud to have it here in Milwaukee. And it's going to help small and medium-sized manufacturers integrate new technologies such as AI and robotics into their production processes.
We're talking to John W. Miller, new Secretary and CEO of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. Secretary Miller, if I pulled business articles from Wisconsin over the last year or so, I don't know what percentage of them would be about data centers, but it would be a lot. I would bet the over on that. What do you see as the role of these data centers in Wisconsin's economy?
Well, it's a great question. The data centers, you know, first of all, these are local decisions made by local players. So, you know, the WEDC needs to play a role, as does the state. But we want to make sure that we advance. And I think there have been some very valid questions raised about the environment and their use of electricity. But my job at the WEDC is to balance those concerns with creating jobs. And a lot of them offer tremendous amount of job creation, not only in the manufacturer, but also in the running and the management of the data centers when they're left over. And I think as we really dive into some of the concerns, I think we're going to find out that we can, local leaders, state leaders, can figure out a very, very reasonable path forward. If you look at water, you know, these data centers aren't going to take any more water than some of our paper plants or cheese plants that are already operating in Wisconsin. As far as it comes to electricity, I was pleased to see that some of the partners, especially Microsoft, have come forward and say, listen, our operations at our data center shouldn't impact a local ratepayer. So if we can get good cooperation there, I think that these data centers will be a boon to the Wisconsin economy.
One concern I've seen at some of the local levels on data centers is, a lot of jobs in building these centers, sure, but it doesn't really take that many people to run them once they're open. If you're at a position where you're saying, do we want to lure data centers here to Wisconsin versus manufacturing or something else, how do you try to make sure you're getting as many jobs per dollar invested there?
That's a great question. I mean, I think, like I mentioned earlier, I think that my goal is at least to do both and to do any and all. You know, I think that we need to focus on bringing in the next new manufacturing, but also the data centers are important too. Per capita, maybe in terms of their space, they're not employing as many people as maybe a production facility, but who they're employing is important, and bringing those types of people into the economies to help them, especially with our university system, we need to make sure that we're producing the next leaders. So I think it puts a little bit of pressure also on our university system to make sure that we can fill those jobs, because they're going to be they're going to lead to the next thing that we don't even know about. So I'd rather have a production of a cutting edge data center and have those employees here, because those employees are going to lead in advance in what's next. And we want to have whatever is next happen here in Wisconsin.
Philosophy-wise for economic development, we had the Foxconn experience in Wisconsin where, as a state, we kind of swung for the fence on this big project. You could say, okay, we need to go for those big fish, or you could say we need a lot of little investments. Some of them are going to pan out, some of them won't. When it comes to balancing those big swings versus lots of little stuff, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, the big swings are great, and they land, and we've done a bunch of them, and we've got a lot to show for it. You know, the original Foxconn swing didn't result in the number of employees, but we've steadily worked with them along the way, and they're a valued member of our workforce here. They employ well over 1,000 people. We just renegotiated their contract for the third time. They're continuing to invest and continuing to be a good partner to Wisconsin. So we need to make those big swings, but we also need to focus on, you know, I've spent time in, just last week, I was in Eagle River, Wisconsin on Main Street. And so we need to focus on Main Street businesses too, that are employing only a handful of people. But if you think about that economy in Biloxi County, that Main Street was hopping. There was not a vacant space. It's a population of only about 2,000 people, but their downtown was completely vibrant. And I think if we could replicate that in all the small downtowns in Wisconsin, that would be an excellent outcome, because those people who live and work and shop in those communities recirculate their dollars in their very own community. So if every storefront is full in those communities, those people who live there are going to be bringing their dogs in to get groomed, as we saw in Eagle River, or going to the popcorn store next door and recirculating those dollars back into the economy. So again, WDC is a pretty robust agency. We are more than capable of doing projects in the billions, but we also take on projects like Tootsie's Tea here in Milwaukee, where we gave a bridge building grant for $10,000 that helped them renovate a vacant space and put that back into the tax base and contribute to their local community. And so we want to leave no stone unturned in the remaining time that I have and that Governor Evers has in his term.
And briefly, workforce. There is a whole workforce development department. How do you make sure the project you're bringing into a community, whether it's Milwaukee or Eagle River, matches the available workforce there?
That also a great question. We need to really, you know, I had the honor of serving on the UW Board of Regents. I was also the regent designee sitting on the Technical College System Board. We have an extremely robust talent building network here in Wisconsin. We have the ability to train the next generation of workers, but it's a competitive world out there. We have other universities outside of state that are competing for our students. The best thing we can do is give our students a reason to stay in Wisconsin at an affordable tuition rate, learn their skill here, and then apply their training to building the Wisconsin economy. And I think that we can do that with the right sort of investment, both in our technical college, but also in our university system.
Secretary Miller, thanks again for joining us.
It's a pleasure. I look forward to doing it more often.
That is John W. Miller, the Secretary and CEO of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. He recently spoke with WPR's Rob Ferret. Coming up, 8 counties in western Wisconsin are working together to promote outdoor recreation and boost the local economy.
These outdoor recreation assets have a lot of value, and if you leverage those as part of your economic base, you're going to see some really good return on investment.
That's next. You're listening to Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with the story about saying goodbye to the family homestead and considering what matters most.
There's a special place in our hearts for our childhood homes. But when we have to say goodbye, whether it's due to a move or urban sprawl, what moments do we soak up one last time? Writer and forester Ron Weber returned to his family home and tells us what he cherishes the most.
The 320-mile trip from my home in Weyerhaeuser to my boyhood home in Kenosha County had offered me plenty of time to think. For the first time in my life, our home in Kenosha was no longer ours. Glaciation had finally claimed it. Instead of snow and ice, this glacier is composed of drywall and chipboard, concrete and blacktop. Impervious to climate, it grows insidiously outward, never retreating. Now it had touched us. In order to connect growing parts of the county with the city proper, the quiet county road where I learned to ride my bike was to be transfigured into a new 4-lane highway, complete with median. Engineers determined our home and 1 acre of our 5-acre woodlot stood in the path of least resistance. Though the rest of my family laments the loss of the house, it is the 1 acre of yard and woods that saddens me most. I grew up with the trees there, and in a very real way, they are as much a part of my life as my family. My deep feelings towards the outdoors had its genesis on this 5-acre woodlot. Later, I would go on to the UW Stevens Point to learn the science and art of forestry, but it was here that I grew to love trees and the landscapes on which they lived. Turning off the now bustling county road into the driveway, I was greeted by familiar faces. There was the twisted, gnarly box elder and the tall, stately white spruce. They were all special, but as with people, I had my favorites. A large pear tree, misshapen from several traumas throughout its life, was the first I visited. It was a prolific producer, and I can still remember how much I enjoyed the green, unripe pears. I climbed it often, and one day I carved LD in honor of Laura Dempsey, in my eyes, the prettiest girl in the sixth grade, into an upper branch where none of my siblings or friends would see. That secret I shared only with the tree. Next was a 20-inch diameter bur oak that was a mere pole when we had the clothesline tied around its sturdy trunk. Now it was just beginning to realize its true potential. It could easily last another century or two. It just didn't seem fair, but it was here as a boy that I learned that life is not always fair, among countless other lessons. My last stop was a towering blue spruce rooted in the front yard. As I stood by it, I quietly thought, like Dorothy said to the scarecrow, "I think I'm going to miss you most of all." Planted about 8 years before my birth, I had literally grown up with this tree. It was a favorite hiding spot for our games of kick the can. It was second base for our almost daily wiffle ball games, a 10-foot-high row of mulberry trees pruned into a hedge serving as an adequate replica of the ivy-covered walls of Wrigley Field. To the workers that come to cut down these trees, this will probably be simply another job, some more trees. Somehow, I wanted them to know they were more than that. Walking back to my car, I again looked at the box elder and spruce. Another's eyes may have seen the stately spruce as a beauty and the crooked box elder a beast. My eyes made no such distinction, knowing that the box elder had supported our tire swing for years. It was a cogent reminder that indeed, beauty is in the eyes of the beholder.
Writer Ron Weber is a forester who lives in Weyerhaeuser. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lola and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum. This is WPR News.
For many Wisconsinites, western Wisconsin and the Driftless area are synonymous with fishing, hiking, skiing, biking, and more outdoor activities. These recreational activities help generate millions of dollars in revenue and thousands of jobs for the region. But the counties and municipalities haven't always promoted these activities as a team effort. That's starting to change. 8 western Wisconsin counties have joined together to produce Wisconsin's first ever regional outdoor recreational plan and apply for a USDA program for support. Rob Ferret spoke to 2 people who helped put it together. Ross Peterzak is a senior planner with the West Central Wisconsin Regional Planning Commission. And Kennedy Domershi is the Outdoors Development Manager for Visit Eau Claire.
Kennedy, let's start with you. For people not familiar with outdoor recreation in this 8-county area, give us a taste of what we can experience there.
I almost feel like a better question is, what could you not experience here? There really is outdoor recreation of all kinds, and it's all year round. So we've got cross-country skiing, snowshoeing, snowmobiling trails galore. Nordic ski culture is really strong over here. We also have ski jumping. We've got a couple ski jumps and a couple clubs dedicated to it. And then in the summer, Eau Claire really comes alive with outdoor recreationists. So we've got paddlers galore. We have 2 major river systems coming right through Eau Claire and within the 8-county region, so many other rivers that people can recreate on. So a bunch of people who just go out to boat. Fishermen are healthy over here. There's so many of them. A bunch of fishing guides as well. hiking, biking is huge here as well, mountain biking and road biking, gravel biking. I mean, you name it. I feel like if anyone comes to this area, you're not going to be bored. And if you are, just contact me because I can give you a good itinerary.
Okay, Ross, Kennedy just listed a lot of recreational opportunities. This is also an economic opportunity for this area. And I know individual counties, individual municipalities might be trying to take advantage of that. What's behind this effort to say, hey, let's get these eight counties together and come up with a real plan?
Yes. Yeah, so I would say the impetus of this was the USDA grant that helped facilitate this planning effort. A big factor of that was economic development and job growth in the rural economy. We've seen throughout the state reports coming out that show the value of outdoor recreation and tourism. That data is getting better as the years go on. It's not quite down to the local level yet, though I do have to give credit to Kennedy and Visit Eau Claire in trying to report that for the city of Eau Claire. And so we're really just trying to show that these outdoor recreation assets have a lot of value. And if you leverage those as part of your economic base, you're going to see some really good return on investment. The hope is that as we start to really connect this region and really bring everyone together, that we'll be able to see some significant growth in demand from both tourism and residents alike for more services, both directly related to outdoor recreation and indirectly through food, retail, lodging and hotels, other stays like that.
And Ross, what does it mean to have these eight counties come together and having this, you know, this systemic plan and really being thoughtful about how we do that? What do you see as the multiplier effect of this cooperation for the local economy?
Sure. I have to say that this is a significant undertaking. It involves two regional plan commissions broken evenly across the two eight counties or across the eight counties. We've had almost 140 people involved in our stakeholder groups. The USDA program, the Rural Partners Network, is all of government. So we're looking from the federal agencies all the way down to the local communities. The multiplier effect is potentially very high, especially when you consider our trail networks and what's possible there. We could really connect this area with hundreds of miles of trails and really bring communities together along them. And I think that if we're able to do that, we can see a lot of visitors coming, staying, traversing the region in different ways. Hopefully that will just create more demand for these services and for people to come out. If we can get all of these communities to realize that and to start partnering together and saying, you know, we would benefit from this segment of trail while it's not directly in our community, but it might be a county over, eventually that's going to connect to us. And so we're willing to support that now if they're willing to support us later. And really, hopefully that can help get some of this infrastructure in place that could really connect the region.
And Kennedy, people go to that area to hike, locals hike, and do all the other things you listed earlier. Do you see this as an opportunity, though, to put this part of our state on the map, maybe at a national level, to say, hey, this is a place I'm going to make a decision to go to because I like outdoor recreation?
1,000,000%. I'd say that's definitely one of the biggest goals of building an outdoor recreation destination is making it well known. If it can be nationally well known, even better. I think Wisconsin as a state kind of has two primary tourism attractions as far as like what I imagine outsiders seeing Wisconsin as. So Door County, the little thumb of Wisconsin, and then the Driftless area, which I don't even think is as well known as Door County. So I think as far as our region goes and how it fits into that overall picture and people's perceptions of Wisconsin, we hope to challenge how they think of things and showcase ourselves as, like I said, year-round outdoor recreation. There's kind of something for everybody. And it's very approachable. We're not like Moab, Utah, where we have these big epic adventures. We're kind of a little bit of everything for everyone. So we want to be able to promote ourselves as a region that kind of shows we've got a little bit of Driftless, a little bit of edge of the Driftless. I feel like the Eau Claire kind of Chippewa Falls area belongs there. And then we even have Clark County, which is like, you know, pretty plain, pretty flat. So I'd like to kind of use the marketing and promotion side of things to highlight all the different sort of landscapes we have within the eight county region and really show people that there's more to Wisconsin than just beer, cheese, Door County, and the Driftless.
We're talking about a plan by eight counties in western Wisconsin to develop the local outdoor recreation economy. Kennedy Domershi is the Outdoors Development Manager for Visit Eau Claire, and Ross Peterzak is a senior planner with the West Central Wisconsin Regional Planning Commission. Ross, part of this story is marketing, like we were just talking about. You also mentioned infrastructure. What kind of things are you looking at to develop that outdoor recreation infrastructure?
So primarily, it's going to be the physical infrastructure would be the trails. That is going to be DNR's kind of trail corridor that they've laid out for the entire state. Most of those are rails to trails programs, so it's abandoned railroads. In some cases, those were converted to highways. And so it's a mix of trying to use available land that's not being used and trying to circumvent the highways and make it work so we have some off-road trails. It's also going to be for ATVs, snowmobiling, things of that nature, just kind of some cleared areas. They don't have to be paved trails, but gravel, limestone, and then areas that can be groomed. So as far as the physical infrastructure, that's what we're hoping to connect as far as this network goes. We're also talking about trying to develop out our nature centers, improving the quality of those nature centers, looking at some of the challenges we're facing, especially with the winter seasons and as many usable days for snowmobiling and cross-country skiing, looking at trying to potentially consider snowmaking equipment and facilities so that we can manage closed loop routes and just making sure that we're able to keep that year-round aspect and give everyone something to do no matter what the season is.
Kennedy, what kind of jobs and businesses are you hoping doing this could support in your area?
We're hoping our region and putting this focus on outdoor recreation and really growing our economy attracts outdoor manufacturers. But then also we want to see more guides in the area pop up. So people who are willing to take people out on guided hikes or paddling trips. We also hope to see a lot more outfitters and retail shops pop up too. That is definitely something that's lacking within the business inventory of our region. For example, Lake Wazee is one of the premier scuba diving locations in the region and really within the state, but there's no area you can go or store you can go to get scuba gear. So things like that, that really help people experience the outdoors in the most full way possible. We do have, at least downtown Eau Claire, a business that opened up recently called Eau Claire Outdoors. And she's providing a lot of services to the community, such as, of course, the retail shop, but also rentals for kayaks and stand-up paddle boards and snowshoes and things like that. So I hope to see a lot more businesses like that pop up because there's a big need. Another thing that we don't have at all is a shuttling service. So we talked about our river systems, which is amazing. But if you don't have a motor to motor back up to where you put in, you need to have a shuttle. So if a business like that could come in too, that would really fill a big gap. But lots of money, lots of business needs, especially in the outdoor industry. And we hope to attract more here.
And briefly, Ross, what's next?
So we have to submit the plan to USDA for review and hopefully their approval. Once that's done, we want to bring this plan back to the counties and get them to adopt or at least formally recognize the plan through some sort of resolution that signifies their understanding, awareness, and support for this effort. From there, we have to consider who's going to kind of manage the plan moving forward. So the two RPCs that help write this plan, we kind of have to go back into our spheres of influence and respect that. But there's been quite a bit of talk within the steering committee of trying to form a new group to serve as the stewards for this plan and start getting some of the implementation efforts underway, start meeting with some of the groups that we've identified for the specific assets to really start focusing in and develop some strategic plans and just kind of get the ball rolling there.
We'll leave it there. Ross, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here. Thank you again.
And Kennedy, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Kennedy Domershi is Visit Eau Claire's Outdoors Development Manager. Ross Peterzak is Senior Planner with the West Central Wisconsin Regional Planning Commission. They spoke with Rob Ferret. On Monday's show, we're going to hear from 911 dispatch centers around Wisconsin that are incorporating artificial intelligence into their call center operations. In some, AI is handling the non-emergency calls. And we want to know, have you interacted with AI on the phone? How did the chatbot do with your needs? What do you think of 911 dispatch centers using AI as part of their emergency response? Tell us your thoughts. Share your story on AI in customer service or in dispatch operations. Email us at wisconsintoday@wpr.org. And us humans on the team will read it and perhaps bring your comments into the show. Or you can also call or text to get in touch with us. That number is 888-642-0232. That's 888-642-0232. Wisconsin Today producers include Beatrice Lawrence, Lauren Cox, and Joe Tarr. Our technical directors are Tyler Ditter and Sarah Hopeful. Tim Peterson is our managing producer, and the show's executive producer is Dean Kinetter. Learn more about us at wpr.org/Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to WPR News.